Hi folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here. Teresa, I just saw on LinkedIn that you have been in a discussion with somebody who made the case for one-click AI-generated opportunity solution trees. So should we talk about that for a minute? Is that a thing? Hopefully it's not a thing in the future.
Sure. I it is a thing. It's not a thing I recommend. It's actually worse. Have you heard of this site, Synthetic Users?
I heard that there's tools like that that spin up from your personas, random user groups, and you can even run full scenario-based usability testing with click prototypes with these artificial users.
Here is their tagline. Run your user and market research with the most human-like AI participants.
Okay, so let's share with the audience why both of us think it's not a good idea to do this.
Yeah, here's my tagline. If you're building a product for humans, do discovery with humans. Full stop.
I like that. That was really brief. My thing is more on, there is so, as with every framework, with every fill out the blanks things that you could do, the work is always in the meetings. The work is, it's in the alignment that happens when humans are observing other humans to struggle, for example. There's nothing more motivating to a development team than seeing the user struggles firsthand. And if they're in an observation room, and if it's human beings, they're even, you know, mirror neurons. That's how we build connection. And how would our mirror neurons click with artificial intelligence user groups? So I don't see this happening.
Yeah. Okay. So let's back up and talk about these tools and what is available today. And then we can kind of dig into what we should use and not use. So I just wrote a big blog post about this, about generative AI is helpful in discovery, but it's not helpful in the way that some of these tools are being built. So we now have tools that will be your users for you. So Synthetic Users allows you to interview made up people. We now have tools that allow you to literally create an opportunity solution tree in one click. I think they ask you to describe your market, and then you click a button and it gives you an opportunity solution tree. I'm not even really sure how that works because they don't ask for an outcome. So like there's some fundamental misunderstandings about
for company strategy, company goals, something along
those lines. Very little context because they're trying to make it as easy as possible. In fact, the founder posted on LinkedIn, his tagline was opportunity solution trees in one click. And then he described it. And then I commented on it and I said, please don't do this. The point of an opportunity solution tree is not to have it. Opportunity solution trees are synthesis tools that help you as a team align on what you're hearing from real customers so that you can find the best way to reach an outcome. And he wrote back and he said, yeah, but doesn't it help to have AI generate?
Overcome the fear of the blank page.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't it help us overcome the fear of the blank page? And Petra, you're a writer. You've written a couple books now and you blog a lot. What happens when we go from a blank page to a crummy first draft?
So there is nothing wrong with that, but writing is something that usually is done in solitude. So I write my blog post, I edit my blog post, maybe I ask some reviewers for feedback on that or something like that, but it's for people that want to understand how I think and what I want to share and all these kind of things. But that's usually not how I see discovery work, because it's not something where a product owner is hitting themselves in the ivory tower and then is coming back with the opportunity solution trees and the team just builds stuff. That's what we've done in the past and it didn't work well. So yeah, and I'm using a lot of generative AI, and I think you're right. It does help you in discovery because, for example, if teams are inexperienced and have no idea how to de-risk a certain risk, right? They could ask ChatGPT, hey, we're having this risk here. Are there any ideas how you would set up an experiment to de-risk this particular risk in our software development process? And maybe there's some great ideas, and that fosters a or that starts a conversation that the team is having, and people are having experiences, and all these kind of things. So I think that is overcoming the fear of the blank page to some extent. But whoever used such a framework like your Opportunity Solution Tree or other frameworks for product discovery, the first thing is always like, ooh, maybe we're not so aligned on the strategy even. Maybe we never have really talked about what goals are we currently pursuing. Maybe we never really wrapped our head around how does success feel like for our users? So what is the value we deliver and the impact and all these kind of things, right? And that's why I can't imagine, I haven't used such a tool. I haven't seen how helpful this first easy version of an opportunity solution tree is. But I think it's just by definition, wrong, full starting point.
Okay, so you touched on two things that I think are really important. You said that when you write, it helps you figure out what you think. Yep. And I think this is really important. When we go from a blank page to a first draft, most of the thinking happens in going from the blank page to the first draft. And I think when we outsource this to generative AI, generative AI is doing the thinking for us. And there are times when
maybe
I think it's fine.
Maybe the drafting. Maybe only the drafting, by the way.
Yeah, I think there are times when it's okay to do that. But with an opportunity solution tree in particular, the point of the tool is to help you synthesize, you humans, your team,
yeah,
synthesize what you're learning as a team and what you're hearing from customers. And so the point of an opportunity solution tree is not having the tree. The point is doing the work to think about, what did we hear from our customers? Did I hear something different from what you heard?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Like, can we negotiate those differences? Can we capture it in a structured way so we all agree? So there's two things you said that I think are spot on. When we co-create an opportunity solution tree as a team, we have to do the individual work to think about, what did I hear and learn from my customers? And then we have to align as a team around, what did we all hear? And if you do a one-click button opportunity solution tree, you didn't do either one of those things.
No. And we're not even sure how good the algorithm that is working on it has been trained. And so even the result could be rather poor, right? So that's another thing that could be happening. And nobody is able on a team that might be using such a methodology to tell if the starting point that they're then starting to build upon is a rather shaky starting point.
Okay, so I read a blog post about this and I decided to include an example. And this is really going after like why you can't interview AI instead of your customers. So why you should not use synthetic users or any similar tool. I asked ChatGPT to pretend like it was a Netflix customer and to tell me a story about the last time it used Netflix. And it told me a pretty compelling story. They came home from work and they sat on their couch and they gave me a great description of their living room. And they watched Stranger Things and they ate popcorn and drank their favorite beverage while doing so. And it was a really nice, tidy story. And I said, okay, tell me more. How did you pick Stranger Things? And ChatGPT said, oh, well, I've been watching this series and I'm a big fan and here's why I think it's amazing. And so I just went to continue watching. I said, okay, great. And while you were watching, did you uncover any challenges? And ChatGPT said, I did actually. There was a moment where my internet went out and it had to buffer for a second, but it quickly came back and I enjoyed the episode. I said, okay, this is pretty good, right? Like, it's pretty good fiction, but let's dig into this a little bit. Everything was positive. The person loved the show. And look, notice the detail. My favorite beverage.
A beverage.
Right?
If you prime it, if you prime the, and all of us using it a lot, if you're priming the AI towards something, like, were there any issues?
Yeah.
Then it will make up issues because that's what you told it to do. So, yeah, it's
really okay. So then I did it a second time. I said, now adopt a new persona. Tell me about the last time you watched Netflix. And it turns out I got a very different context. It was someone came home from work. They were on their laptop. They were sitting in bed. So totally different context. They were watching a different show. I think it was The Crown. They talked about liking historical period pieces. But everything was amazing. The show was the best show ever. It was really comfortable in their bed, just like it was really comfortable on the couch in the living room. I again asked, what challenges did you encounter? It again told me about internet buffering issues. So like there's no depth here.
It reminds me so much about the initial book that talked about personas is called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. Yeah. And this is so much exactly that, just that it's now not only the team making up personas, now it's the AI making up these users. Yeah. But it's not better than what teams have been doing in the past when they created this totally fictional personas that they were then using.
You know what I realized? People don't know what good human stories look like because they're not conducting good interviews. So let me tell you a real story. I actually interviewed someone about their streaming entertainment habits, and I asked them to tell me about the last time they watched any TV. Here's what she told me. She said, my husband and kids were away, so I had the place to myself. I had a pile of laundry to get through. I'm sitting on the couch folding clothes,
so me,
watching the Olympics. But here's the thing. The Olympics are kind of boring. There's so much stuff I don't care about. So I got distracted. I opened up my laptop. I ended up on Facebook. I found a funny Jimmy Fallon video, which took me to YouTube. 45 minutes later, after watching a bunch of funny videos, I remembered the Olympics were on. So I looked up and it was almost the gymnastics finals. And that's my favorite event. But there was one round left. So I'm like, oh, I better watch. And I got distracted again and I pulled up my phone and I accidentally ruined the finals. Because the Olympics were overseas and she's watching them time delayed. Okay, what's different about this story? Everything wasn't pleasant and amazing. There wasn't a made-up issue. Like, it wasn't, I just sat down and watched my favorite show and everything was, right? It's messy.
Yeah.
We get distracted. We're on multiple devices. We have a pile of laundry to do. Our self-care time, because our family's away, is we do chores while watching TV.
Yeah.
We like the Olympics, but we don't like everything about the Olympics. Right?
Now, like, I have a similar story, if you want to hear it. User testing ages ago for a German platform that is similar to what LinkedIn does these days. And we were having a prototype. It was a German company. So the product and the team was all over the globe. So we were a distributed team. Prototype was in English. Then we had to translate it for the usability test because we did conduct that with German users, right? And we forgot to translate one thing, and that was the edit button. So we didn't translate that to bearbeiten, which would have been the German word. And we had somebody over for the test, and she did all the scenarios, and we made her jump through all the burning hoops, and it was amazing. The test went well. And in the end, we asked her for her overall feedback, and what did she think, and how easy it was to complete the task, and yada, 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 you know the drill. And then she said, like, the most amazing thing. She said, like, you know what I really liked? That you wrote my name on the buttons all over the page. And her name was Edith. And we thought we misspelled her name, but she really appreciated the effort. And this is such a human story. And the team was, so that, for example, was a really big learning for the team on language and translation, and that it really is important that we make sure we translate all of it on the page, because sometimes that's slipped if you do internationalization and all these kind of things, and you think like, yeah, people will cope. But that was really a fun little story to tell, that, and it's such a human story, right? And it's not, yeah, like, I will not deliver you these kind of things.
That is amazing. I love that story. Okay, I don't want to be all poo-poo on generative AI, though, because I do use it. I use it in my discovery work.
A ton.
So I want to talk through where I think it's appropriate. And you already touched on some of this. You mentioned, like, maybe you could ask ChatGPT, I'm working on this solution, where might there be risk? So I like to use generative AI in discovery for two primary purposes. The first is, like, I have 40,000 support tickets that came in this month. What are the trends? Right? That's great. Generative AI is great at summarizing and doing sentiment analysis. Like, that's great. We can do that. So large data sets help me understand what's going on here. And by the way, I'm not going to go through those support tickets on my own anyway.
Anyways.
So I'm letting ChatGPT like augment so like I can get better value out of that data.
Yeah.
The second way I really like to use it is one of the things we teach in all of our courses is how we teach trios, product trios, how to collaborate. No matter what they're doing, we have them do the work individually. So like, let's say they just conducted an interview and they're trying to identify opportunities. They do the work individually, then they come together as a team and they discuss what they heard. And they're given the instructions to pay particular attention to the differences across their team. So nice. They're exploring the different perspectives, then they co-create a team perspective.
Yeah.
So what I love to use generative AI for is as another team member, right? Here's my interview transcript. Identify opportunities. Yeah. I'm not gonna outsource the work to generative AI because we know generative AI hallucinates. It's hard for generative AI to get really specific, but it can be another team member, right? So we're gonna all, you're gonna listen to the interview, identify opportunities. I'm gonna listen to the interview, identify opportunities. And we're gonna also feed the transcript to a generative AI tool. And then we're gonna explore the differences and we're gonna discuss and we're gonna come up with a better version based on those different perspectives. And I love that.
These are two amazing use cases. And I think another one is, hey, ChatGPT, challenge me on. So for example, if a team wrote their research question and their interview questions, and you give that to ChatGPT and say like, hey, can you challenge me on how I set up and structured this interview? Do you see any holes in my scenario or the interview questions that I'm having? That sometimes helps the not so experienced folks to really kind of test some of their interview questions before they actually really use it on humans. So that's another thing, finding holes in some of your arguments, finding holes in your documents. I think that is something that you could still use it for. Always take it with a grain of salt, what's coming back from there, but yeah.
I think that's also a great use case. And I want to be clear, like I keep referencing ChatGPT. I think we could be talking about any of the foundational models. So if you prefer Gemini or you prefer Anthropic, Claude, totally fine. In that example of like, here's my research questions, here's my interview question, give me feedback. What I like to do is to prime ChatGPT. Here's a blog post about research questions and interview questions.
Yeah.
Can you go read it and summarize it? And what are the best tips? Okay. Now here's my research questions and my interview question.
Yes.
Evaluate it for me.
Yes, exactly. That's what I do in a lot of cases as well. Because even sometimes if books or something like that are available in PDF format or something like that, you could even do that. Because you read the book, you understood some of the concepts, but you have read it 2 years ago. So you're not sure if you're still really on top of all of the aspects and nuances. And I think ChatGPT is really good in pointing out all these little things that may have slipped. So that's really a great use case as well for ChatGPT or any of the generative AI tools. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I think this was really fun to dig into generative AI and how it impacts our work. Thanks, Petra.
Indeed.